May have to reconnect to.
There he is. Dan, are you there?
You there?
I am.
Good. All right. Yeah, we appreciate your joining us tonight. Talk a little basketball. You know, it's been football season for much of our season seven. Who's talking? So we're finally getting into a little basketball discussion here. Why don't we start with the ACC? Give us your assessment. You know, we had the media prediction about the ACC with Carolina on top, but how do you break down the conference?
Jim, I don't think that the media prediction is a bad place to start. I think they're probably pretty accurate there, although one of the things that we'll see throughout the season, one of the things that we see in every season, is that people are going to get hurt, and North Carolina's already had an injury. You know, Marcus Page, last I heard, he's out 3 to 4 weeks with a broken hand, his non-shooting hand. But so if he's not able to get back and play, then that certainly changes the equation for North Carolina. But I thought the way the media lined it up was probably pretty accurate in terms of a start of the season kind of thing. The one thing that we're certain about is that that's not the way it'll turn out, but I think that's a good place to start.
You know, go ahead, Frank.
Well, let's talk about those teams in their order. Generally, what we heard down in Charlotte was by a hair, Carolina, then Virginia, then Duke, and then three or four teams, and then the rest of the conference. As that breaks down, talk about the top three and what's at stake and maybe why they're 1, 2, 3.
Well, I think that North Carolina is pretty easy to decide why they're at the top is because they've got a veteran roster of guys who were, you know, I was doing some reading the other day, and their top 10 players are all veteran guys, and they were all top 100 recruits. And that Duke is in the same situation. Everybody who's going to put on a uniform for them this year is top 100 recruits. So with North Carolina, they're not only very talented, obviously, but they are extremely experienced. And so I think that helps them. And Virginia obviously has plenty of experience. They've got a hole to fill with, you know, losing Atkins and losing Justin Anderson. But that's the way programs do. You get in and you fill your holes and you move on. And certainly the Cavaliers have shown over the last couple of years that they have built a program. And Duke, of course, is going to rely on freshmen, but they've had some pretty good success doing that. And so I don't see any reason to presume that the Duke freshmen are not going to perform as we've seen Duke freshmen perform the last couple of years. So I just think that they're very, very good teams. I'm not sure that I agree with you, Frank, in that it's those three teams and then everybody else. I think that there's an awful lot of good basketball teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference, and I think somebody is going to challenge for the title that is not anticipated or was not anticipated by the media.
I got a question about Virginia, but just you spoke about Duke freshmen. For our listeners' sake, talk a little bit about the incoming freshmen, because as we know, Duke has really kind of become like Kentucky recently, where they just reload every year with first-year guys.
Well, I think, Jim, in this day and age of college basketball, if you're going to be an elite team, you almost have to do that. And you have to do that because you're losing guys to the NBA after 1 year. You know, Okafor last year, everybody expected him to go. I'm not sure that people thought Tyus Jones would go. And, of course, the Winslow kid, once he had that great year, then everybody thought, okay, he's going to go. But they think that their point guard is going to be this kid, Derek Thornton, kid out of California. And, you know, Duke, it's not like Duke hasn't started freshman point guards before. You know, Tommy Amaker started as a freshman for them, Bobby Hurley, Jason Williams, Kyrie Irving. So I don't think that that's a problem. But Thornton, if you believe the hype, he is one of the top, if not the top, point guards coming in out of high school. And then a lot of people think that the best player coming out of high school is this 6'9 kid, skinny kid, Brandon Ingram. The kid out of Kinston, North Carolina. I think that he's a guy that people expect to be a lot like maybe Okafor was in terms of the ability to sort of dominate a kind of season. But they've got other guys too. This Chase Jeter was one of the top guys coming out of high school, and then they have another guard, Luke Kennard, who's a great offensive player. So they've got, as they usually do, all very, very highly touted freshmen, and they're going to surround them, or at least they're going to be involved with some veteran guys. You know, Grayson Allen had the great NCAA tournament. Emile Jefferson has played very effectively for him. He's not a big offensive player, but he guards and he rebounds. You know, they're talking about the Plumlee kid is as being somebody who's going to make a contribution. I would think that it would be a minor contribution, but certainly he's a big body. So they've got people that they can, veteran guys that they can fit around the younger guys. So it's not like they're totally freshmen, but I think the freshmen are going to have the biggest impact.
All right. For the first time ever, as you being a guest on our show since the beginning, Dan, I'm going to argue that the veterans for Virginia know the Tony Bennett system. They know the pack line defense. You have Anthony Gill down low at 6'8", 230 to 240 pounds, and he's lean. Malcolm Brogdon is co-MVP preseason at 6'5", and one of the headiest players in the nation. London Perantis has got to be the coolest customer to come down the pike in a long time. Evan Nolte has gotten better every year, and if he can ever hit that corner shot, look out. You've got Darius Thompson sat out this year after transferring from Tennessee. He's 6'5". You've got Devin Hall, 6'5". You've got Mariel Shayok, 6'6". Jack Salt, a redshirt freshman, is making waves. Isaiah Wilkins was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Georgia. And Mike Toby's only 7 feet tall and can score from the elbow and also down on the baseline. All these, you know, Toby, Gill, Brogdon, and Nolte are seniors, and Brogdon and Gill are, Brogdon and Gill are both fifth-year seniors. So,
if the point you're trying to make is that you're describing one of the top teams in the country, I'm in complete agreement with you.
Okay, I'm relieved.
Let me ask you this in that regard. the Butler team a few years ago that got to the final game back-to-back years, they did it with upperclassmen. Is Virginia got that type of team this year that could go deep in the tournament?
Sure they do. I think that one of the things that the Cavaliers will have to overcome is that, as they have demonstrated in a couple of these, the most recent NCAA tournaments, is as I see Virginia, they're very efficient, they're very effective, they're great defensively, but it just seems to me that they go into games, and at some point in the game, they run into one of these offensive droughts where they just can't put the ball in the basket. And I think that's one of the things that Justin Anderson, when he was healthy early in the season, really helped overcome that. And I think they have to find a way to replace the kind of defensive tenacity, offensive explosiveness, whatever you want to say, that he provided. They have to be able to avoid those offensive droughts, particularly when they're playing other really good teams. That's what sunk them against Michigan State. It was early in the game. It was like 4-4, and the next thing you look up and it's 15-4 or something. And so
yes.
I think those are the kind of things that this Virginia team has to be able to avoid. And it's not like it killed them. I mean, for heaven's sakes, they won 30 games in each of the last 2 years, so they were able to overcome these things. But when you're talking about making a deep run into the NCAA tournament, you have to either be able to avoid or overcome them against the top competition in the country. And that's the one thing that the Cavaliers haven't been able to do despite their tremendous success over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you one. And a lot of times when we have you on early, rule changes, I know the 30-second clock is a big one. What else is a key change this year that might impact the game?
Jim, I really don't think that the 30-second clock is going to be that big a deal. I think that the thing that is going to impact the game more than anything else, if they stick to it, is not necessarily rules changes, but their points of emphasis. And they're supposed to be emphasizing freedom of movement and reducing the physical nature of play. And if they do that, then you're going to have increased scoring. If they do not do that, then the scoring is actually going to go down because it's going to be harder to score in 30 seconds than it was in 35. And keep in mind that they've gone to the 30-second shot clock because scoring in college basketball is at historic lows. And that means very simply that teams were scoring more points when they had a 45-second shot clock. And in fact, teams were scoring more points when they had no shot clock and no three-point line. So I think, to my mind, yes, the 30 seconds, that's the shot clock, that is going to be a change, but I think it's going to be a minor change. I think that, you know, another one of the rules I think that's designed to reward defensive play is if a team is taking the ball up the court and they're still in the backcourt and the defense knocks it out of bounds, then the 10 seconds does not reset as it always did in the past, although you can still reset the 10-second count by calling a timeout. They've eliminated the ability of coaches to call timeouts during live balls. So I think those are all minor things. I think the things that are the most important are the rules that are in place. They've expanded the restricted area line. It's gone from 3 feet out to 4 feet. So now it's the same as the NBA, and what that's important for is a secondary defender trying to come over and draw a charge. And if I understand what I read and hear correctly, they've gone back to their interpretation that they started with 2 years ago and then immediately abandoned it because the coaches complained. And that is that the secondary defender has to be in position before the offensive player starts the shooting motion. That's what they had, and they really eliminated a lot of those charging calls. And they switched back to the old interpretation, that is that the defender had to be in position before the player left the floor.
Well, Dan, so I'm sorry to interrupt, but we got to rock and roll here. But we really appreciate, and this will not be your last visit to Who's Talking this year. Hopefully, look forward to once we get planned, getting your update on how things are progressing.
Well, Jim, it'll be fun to see. I just hope they enforce their rules, their interpretations with the fouls, so that we have a cleaner game. I think it'd be more fun.
Absolutely. All right. Dan Bonner, former Who and current analyst, longtime analyst. So we appreciate Dan joining us tonight on Who's Talking.
Thank you, Dan. All right. We're looking to catch up with Dr. Jody Smith with the Ortho Virginia injury report. Dan is exactly right. There's going to be confusion here at the beginning of the season, Jim.
Well, there always is. You know, the one thing he mentioned that I didn't realize, but I really like, I've always objected to coaches being able to call timeouts.
Yes.
I think the guys on the floor need to be intelligent enough to recognize when it's time to call a timeout. So I think that'll be a positive and maybe make the players more in control of the game than the coaches, as opposed to the coaches. But we got Dr. Smith on the line.
Jody, this is Frank. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, guys. How are you all?
We're good. We had to deal with some technical glitches. Apparently, there were some gremlins in the computer system, and it was hard to tell for a little while there where people were and whether we were on the air or off the air or where the music was and everything else. But anyway, I hope you're doing well.
I'm good. I feel bad. I would rather listen to Dan Bonner than me.
Well, the good news is Dan Bonner will be back, and so will you. So we're not too worried about that. Dan was giving us some excellent insights, and I think once he gets a chance to see a bunch of games, his analysis of the rule changes and how the teams are going to adjust, that'll be very interesting. I can't wait to hear that conversation. But
well, Dan's a throwback to the student-athlete concept. He's a really bright guy, which helps to make him a terrific analyst.
Absolutely. You know, Jody, during the game on Saturday down at Miami, I did not see any kind of major injuries of any sort, and there was no news today from Mike London. However, we do know that Tim Harris hurt his shoulder in recent weeks, and I know that you and the good specialists over there at Ortho Virginia are treating a lot of kids on the local level with shoulder injuries, and What's the type of injury that you typically see?
So I think Tim Harris has a separated shoulder, which is kind of a different animal than a lot of the shoulder injuries that we see. As opposed to being involved in the ball and socket, it really involves more of the collarbone where it comes into the shoulder blade.
Yep.
And typically it's a contact injury. You see these guys go down, and they shake their arm like they have a stinger, but what's happened is that joint gets separated by the impact, and it's fairly painful. Typically, in a non-throwing athlete, it's all based about how much pain they can tolerate. So I guess a lot of it's going to depend on how he's doing as far as pain goes as to how when he returns.
You know, it's fascinating. I remember in high school, they used to put a harness on a lineman if they had separated their shoulder to try to make sure that it wouldn't pop out. And I have seen a couple instances when I was playing lacrosse, intramurals, and then on the club team in Charlottesville for the UVA club, you know, up there, guys would pop their shoulder back in and they would get someone to help them. And it always made me cringe. I was so glad I never had that type of injury. What's happening when that occurs?
That's a little different. So that's involving the ball and socket. And that is, you know, you're talking about kind of the Mel Gibson phenomenon from Lethal Weapon where he bangs yep. his shoulder against the wall and goes back in. That's actually when the ball itself comes out of the socket. And so that happens typically. You hear people talk about labral tears and cartilage tears. And so in order for the shoulder to pop out of place, you have to stretch and tear the ligaments. And if it comes all the way out, you actually do have to have somebody pull and pop it back in for you. Most of the time with our athletes in at UVA, we've had guys who've had what they call subluxation, which means it slides out about halfway and then it pops back in. But once it's happened, there's this tendency for it to recur over and over again, and particularly in the offensive linemen when they get engaged, they get their arms out away from the body, it'll continue to slip. And we've had probably four or five guys in the last two or three years who've had to have that operation to repair the labrum and the cartilage so that it won't keep happening.
You know, it's a fascinating thing and a worrisome thing, I'm sure, for all football players. Jody, we thank you and everyone at Ortho Virginia for all the support from day one on Who's Talking, and we appreciate your analysis of that situation. And hopefully Tim Harris will get back on the field. How long do you think it would take maybe to get him healed up enough and rehab to get him back out there?
Yeah, typically it's based on pain. So hopefully, you know, with a couple weeks of rehab, he'll be back out playing pretty quickly.
Jody, as Frank said, we really appreciate you and your colleagues not only calling into the show and doing the spots, but your support of Who's Talking. Sounds like you're in a car going home, so hope you're going home to have a nice dinner.
I'm trying to get there. The weather's not helping out, but we're always happy to help, Frank. We appreciate all you guys do to keep Virginia fans informed about the sports, and we always want to be a part of this as long as it's going on.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to jump to break now, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about next week's live remote at Fridays, which is going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to wrap up our thoughts on the big Virginia at Louisville game next Saturday. Stay with us. This is Who's Talking.